Well, thanks again for coming over, Mr. Pesley. Have you ever actually listened to the show or the beginning? This is the role thing I put together while I was on my way to your house for the first time.
Ah, yes. Excellent.
All right, come on in the door.
There you are, at the door. Oh, that does something to my door. Should I have done one of these
Hello,
to come over
I'm here?
Here
for the movies.
I don't know, was it raining and stuff?
No,
well,
it was just normal.
Just in
I took
time
the bus.
For another dastardly double feature. Have a seat and let the terror begin.
Oh, ah, I do like that. That is very good, young man. You are getting quite good at this internet thing.
Oh, well, thank you. And like I said before, thanks again for coming over. This episode's a little different. First of all, apologies to our listeners. It's a little late. A lot late. I think a schedule of every other week might work better than weekly. What do you think?
Yes, I do have quite a bit to do during the week, and I cannot always come up with an excellent double feature, which is actually why I'm glad that you developed the one we're about to watch today.
Yeah, exactly. So what we're going to do this time is we're going to watch the movies and then come back and talk about them, of course, as usual. And I'm sure you're probably a little interested to find out what we've got here today.
Yes, I am very curious. Although if it is a torture porn movie or a remake of a classic, I think I will have to leave.
Well, I was gonna get The House on Haunted Hill and The Haunting remakes from the 90s or the early 2000s, but I didn't think you would...
No, 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 young man. That's, do not mess around with me. I'm very old, and I do not have the time.
Right, right. No, I get it. Okay, so what I wanted to do with these two movies that I chose is give you the opportunity to see what is great about horror right now. There's a lot of amazing directors and writers putting together these, like, super creepy films and getting them out there in different ways. Now, I saw both of these movies for the first time on Netflix, but I heard about both of them on, you know, online, on Twitter, on podcasts. There's one called Killer POV that turned into Shockwaves that I like a lot. And they've even had some of the people involved in these films on as interviewees. So as soon as they came up for streaming, I definitely checked them out.
Well, I have no idea what most of the things you just said mean. So maybe you should tell me what the films are.
Totally. Okay, so the first one is called The Invitation. It was made last year, kind of came out this year. And it's directed by Karen Kusama. She also did Jennifer's Body, which you probably haven't seen because you're, like, super old.
You don't have to be flip, young man.
Right, right, sorry. So, this is a film about a guy named Will and his girlfriend Kira going to a dinner party held by his ex-wife Eden and her new boyfriend David. A bunch of their other friends are there, and there's kind of some weirdness going on. You don't exactly find out what right away, but the reason Will and Eden broke up was because of something that happened to their son a long time ago. After that, we're going to watch the Ty West 2013 film, The Sacrament. I'm definitely not going to say anything about that one. And then we're just going to jump back in here and talk about these films and kind of why I put them together, if you're curious.
That sounds excellent. Now, where is your theater room?
Oh, man. I have kids, so I don't have a theater room. I have a TV with a line through it because my son smashed it with something like a year and a half ago.
Oh, well, maybe next time we will do this at my place.
Well, you know, that would be great. Or if you want to help me build a theater in my garage, that'd be cool too.
I will think about it. I'm not quite as handy as I used to be, but I can put a theater together.
Cool, okay. All right, so pretend you're hearing the sound, and we'll be right back to talk about these movies after the cut. All right, and we're back. Mr. Dastardly, what did you think of The Invitation and The Sacrament? Do you have a reignited faith in horror directors of today?
Young man, we have watched a variety of different movies here, from 80s slashers to, well, Blood Diner and many other films, including the old Haunting movies. But I must say that these two together were quite frightening. I was on the edge of my seat the entire time, and I am very impressed with both of these filmmakers.
Oh man, I'm super glad you're into him. Do you want to describe it, or should I describe it, you know, since we kind of switched roles this time?
Go ahead, young man. Do as you please.
Okay, so like I was saying, in the earlier part of this episode, which you just heard like a minute ago, Will and Eden used to be married. Something happened to their son. They split up. Will is with a woman named Kira. Eden has a boyfriend. And Eden invites a bunch of her and Will's friends to their house, which is kind of like up in the hills of California, I think. Now, things get off to a bad start right away because they hit a wolf in the street, Will and Kira, on their way there. And he's got to, like, kill it with a crowbar.
It was a tire iron.
Yes, exactly. Good call. Thank you, Mr. Dastardly. So it's, like, off to a bad start. They get there. Everybody's kind of putting on a good face, but, you know, immediately when he walks in, he's seeing flashes of a kid. You can kind of figure out what the deal is from that, even though, like I said, it doesn't get fully explained. And then things just kind of start seeming weird. Like, the boyfriend, his name's David. David, like, locks the door while they're in there, and their one friend isn't showing up. And Will goes into Eden's bedroom and finds that she's kind of taking medication or something. And then just things start getting weirder and weirder and weirder. He starts getting really worried about this friend Troy, who didn't show up. And one of their other friends wants to leave because things get a little too weird for her. And then kind of like... Oh, and there's also two other people that show up. There's a girl, a younger woman, who, you know, Eden and her boyfriend know. And then there's an older guy who comes in named Pruitt. Her name's Sadie, his name's Pruitt. And the four of them all know each other. And it's kind of like, what's going on? And eventually we find out what is going on when David and Eden show them a video about this kind of like cult type thing they're in, where they say that they can, what would you say?
They can remove the bad parts of their lives from working through them in various ways.
Yeah, so it's kind of hard to tell, but like what freaks everybody out, as I'm sure you remember, is when part of the video changes into like a woman dying on camera, and that freaks everybody out, understandably. So there's like a weird vibe to the whole thing.
And yes, and exactly, the vibe carries through, and I think you're supposed to wonder whether Will is losing his mind. There's plenty of shots of him contemplating himself in the mirror or near the sink or getting spooked or seeing things. We see the movie much of the time, if not all of the time, through his perspective. He is the one seeing the visions. We follow him into the bedroom when he finds the pills, which he saw because he was outside looking in through a window or a door, I guess, while he was going to get firewood or some such. But it's very interesting how close it stays to him. And yet, even with that, you know, usually when you do a film like that, the audience is supposed to think in line with the main character, but because we see him having these fits, if you will, these moments of potential instability, we start to wonder if he's the crazy one or if it's Eden.
See, I kind of had a different I get that. I see where you're coming from, and I can see that that's clearly the intent of the film, but maybe there is one part where something finally happens. I had forgotten about it. I've seen this movie once before tonight. There's a part that happens where, like, you get fully invested in Will and what he's going through. There is a bit, though, where they really flip it around. And Karen does this amazing job where there's a dinner scene and you're seeing his reaction. And he's having a really hard time.
It was a lot like the dinner scene in Ravenous after he has had his experience out in the wild.
Yeah, exactly. No, I thought the same thing, where it's like people's mouth noises and close-ups on food being eaten, and Will's just kind of taking all this in, and it clearly unsettles him, and he winds up going outside for some air, and kind of everybody else is just like, okay, Will, you know, you're having a weird time, that's fine, but they're all understanding because they know specifically what has happened, even if we don't. And I think that little bit of non-information that we're given, or not given, I guess, is a great little key to why this movie is so good and creepy. We don't know what's going on. We don't really know what they've been through. So it's hard for us to judge we just see what's happening and judge based on that, as opposed to like the Friends, you know, we're judging based on history.
I know you have another point to get to, but that is very key. Instead of feeling like a member of the party, the dinner party, the Friends, this group that clearly knows each other and has known each other for years, we never quite feel inside the group. Maybe it's the Will connection, but we feel on the outside because we do not have all of the details, which makes it the whole thing that much more off-putting.
Exactly, and the scene I was talking about, I was kind of getting there, it's after that dinner scene, you know, he seems to be going crazy, and then, you know, one of his buddies comes down and kind of talks him out of his funk and is like, come on, man, it's fine. And then he gets this phone call that's about something else. It's a message. And you're like, oh, no, what is going on? And then right after that, there's another batch of craziness where you're completely wondering, you know, I guess I was wrong before. You wind up being completely curious as to who's the bad guy, who's doing what, who's crazy, if anybody. And then the last, I'd say, 25 minutes, you know exactly who's bad, who's good, and what's going on.
Oh my goodness, young man, this film is intense. As you talked about, you're in and out of believing in Will and whether he's really experiencing these things, if the people he's with have really gone crazy, or if maybe they really did hear themselves in their crazy cults down in Mexico. We don't know until the end, as you mentioned, in which case it is a 25-minute battle of intensity. There's little dips where you're slowing down and everything seems to be okay for a minute, and then something else happens. And again, I do not want to spoil this movie. I think you are very correct in picking this as a wonderful example of modern horror films. And it makes me want to see even more, especially by this director. But it's so intense, and it's in a small, cramped space. It's very much like when we watch Terror Train, where they're on the train, you get an understanding of the dimensions of the place and how cramped it is and how that can play with someone's mind. And the same becomes true of this house. Now, it's a very large house. It's a nice house up in, you know, Californian hills somewhere where people have a lot of money. And then it's just a locked fortress. You realize that maybe instead of keeping things out, the place was made to keep people in.
Right. And again, I don't want to give too much away. It sounds like we both really enjoy this movie and kind of the effect it had on us. The first time I watched it, I was distraught. I'm a dad, so like there being a kid that something happened to in it hooked me immediately. I mean, frankly, we've talked about this before. I wouldn't last very long in most horror movies, but I don't even think I would have made it to this party because if I had hit a coyote or whatever it was on the way to the place, the event, the thing, I probably, and I had to beat it with a tire iron, as you said, I would probably not stick around for the rest of it.
Yes, I don't know if I would have gone to the party either. It seems a bit crazy.
But, you know, again, before we kind of move on to the next film, we should talk about this cast, which is amazing. And they're mostly unknown. I mean, they're all unknown to you, I guess, because you don't really keep up. But Will is Logan Marshall Green. Kira was Imaitzi Courtneildy. Apologize if I butcher that name. David is Michael Huseman. Eden is Tammy Blanchard. Those are the kind of the four main ones, and their friends are Michelle Krusiak, Mike Doyle, Jordi Velasuso, Jay Larson, Marie Delfino, Lindsay Burge, John Carroll Lynch, and there's a few others in there. And this, everybody, you know, their two friends, Sadie and Pruitt, that's Lindsay Burge and John Carroll Lynch, they just have this, like, she has this, like, manic kind of energy, and he has this kind of like very plain but also like darkness to him.
Yes, it's very below the surface. He looks like he might be a little dull, but he has obviously something going on underneath.
Exactly. And the friends, you know, they all felt real. There's couples, there's histories. Again, you don't really know, and like you said, that's kind of putting you on the, I didn't even think about that. The whole point of this movie is that it's a dinner party. The invitation, and we're getting the invitation, but we're not participating, and we don't know what's happening. I mean, the closest character that we could relate to are the two crazy people from the cult and Kira, Will's girlfriend, but clearly she knows more stuff than we do even. So we're just kind of completely clueless going into this thing. And it really, it does. You're right. You totally nailed it. It puts us off balance. It puts us off center. We don't know what to think about who or what's going on. And it all just, it really comes together in this amazing film.
And the thing I liked about it the most, not the most, I should say, I very much enjoyed this picture and will consider getting one of these Netbox subscriptions at some point if things like this are on there, is the fact that there's clearly hinting at an even bigger story here. I don't want to give it away, but there's a thing at the end that they all see, the survivors see, and it makes them wonder what's really going on.
Yes, totally. So that's something that, like, I'm super curious about. I hate when a movie, like, over-explains too much. But this one, I just, like, I don't even know if I want it in the movie itself. Maybe, like, a quick police report, or even just an interview with the director. But, like, we're so isolated in this one thing, and then there's clearly something bigger going on. And I want to know more about what that bigger thing was, and the people behind it, and what happened, and how it was perceived by the rest of the world or the community. And I mean, man, if that doesn't make for a great film, I don't know what does.
Yes, precisely right. We have the story, we're offset, the scares become quite intense, there's more blood than I expected, it's a bit gorier than I thought. The filmmaking is expert level. Karen Kusama is a genius, and she should make many, many more pictures, in my humble opinion.
Totally. Okay, so are you good? Should we move on to The Sacrament, and then we can talk about both movies?
Yes, that sounds about right.
Okay, so I first discovered Ty West a few years ago. His first kind of big movie was The House of the Devil. People were really high on it. I don't remember liking it, but then I saw The Innkeepers, which I think could be another potential future Dastardly Double feature if I get another chance to pick the films.
I think you've done pretty well this time.
Awesome. So we'll keep this one in mind for later. He also did segments in VHS, and then I saw that he had done The Sacrament, a movie I knew zero about. And so I figured I would give it a shot. And the basic premise of this film is that do you know what Vice is?
Well, I gathered from the film that it is a company that does almost gonzo style documentary storytelling.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I don't know too much about it either, but they've got a channel now, and they do these videos where they really go in and do in-depth interviews and try to, like, really kind of put these a lot of times darker, more dangerous counterculture type stories out there for people to get into. So in the case of this film, you've got, it's actually officially, it is Vice, so they must have licensed the name or whatever, which is pretty cool. In this case, there are three people that work at Vice. Patrick is, I believe, a fashion photographer. He's played by Kentucker Audley. And then you've got Sam, who's AJ Bowen, and Jake, who's Joe Swanberg, who's a director in his own right. Now, AJ Bowen's been in a ton of great newer horror movies. I guarantee you we're going to come across him again in my future picks, and I think he's one of the best around. So this film is about the three of them heading to a place in Africa where Patrick's sister Caroline, played by Amy Semetz, has joined, again, it's kind of a cult type thing. Now, she was on drugs, and she went with this dude, and then eventually she moved to this little community. Well, it's not little, it's big. This community that he set up in Africa that a lot of people had apparently moved to. And it's got, you know, elements of... they're curious about this. I mean, this is the kind of story that they're interested in. And, you know, through Caroline, they're able to set up, like, a visitation. And so that they bring their cameras and they're kind of doing their thing. It seems pretty great. They all follow a guy they call Father, who's wonderfully played by Gene Jones. They don't see him right away. He's more of a talked about figure in the beginning, and then kind of they see, like, the houses they built, and there's farms for the food, and there's a like a nurse doctor station, a little mini hospital, and all this kind of stuff. And the more they talk to people, the more they're like, oh, well, maybe this isn't so bad. The people seem happy. Of course, there's the whole thing where, like, to get in, you have to donate all of your life savings to the thing that helps run it, and then they try to get donations.
Yes, let me stop you there. They continue talking. There is an interview with Father at night, and he's very, very charismatic. This man, you understand, you can see why he's the type of person that could not only potentially help someone, but also convince them to give up their life savings and move to a place in the middle of nowhere, literally led there by men with guns who will either help you or blow your face off. You cannot tell. And yet in the middle of nowhere, I thought that was a very interesting touch. Everything seems unseemly, but because these people have faith, they're into it, and they believe in him.
See, this is something interesting that I thought about while watching this film. I think it's probably more, or I should say differently, effective for people who are more inclined to, like, go to church or be really heavily invested in a religion. Does that make sense? Because, like, if you are invested in that and you believe in that, then I think there's a part of you that's conditioned or trained to believe that a man like that could be good and you can trust him. Now, I never really bought into trusting him. Part of it's because it's a horror movie and I don't really trust anybody who's that charismatic in a horror movie.
Well, with good reason, I would say. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a thing. But also just, like, I don't know, that's not my thing. Like, I don't
want to give myself over completely to any group or organization or person like that that's outside of, you know, like, my family and my friends. So that bit of it, I it's not that it didn't connect with me. I thought that I was actually in the shoes of maybe one of the cameramen for a little while, although even they get kind of convinced that it's pretty great. And then, you know, back to the story, they meet a person who kind of appears out of nowhere and is, like, asking for help, and then really things start going downhill from there. And I know we talked about the last 25 minutes of the invitation being freaky. I want to say it's, like, the last 40 minutes of this movie are bonkers. Things are happening. You don't know what's going on. Oh, I didn't even mention this. It's a found footage. So that's kind of why Vice is involved. That's why the cameras are there. And the cameras are always on one of the three guys who are there. Or somebody else who will pick up the camera. Or if it's on the floor, that kind of thing. So, like, they really play well with that element. Because, you know, in my mind, I don't like found footage movies. I don't know about you.
I find them a little tedious, though not this one.
Right, so I keep finding found footage movies that I like, and I'm surprised by it. So maybe I just saw a bunch of bad ones early on, and now people are, like, much better at doing it. But the camera, I don't want to say it becomes a character, but where it falls and who winds up carrying it become kind of as important and as, like, pulse-pounding almost as everything else going on in the end of this movie. And again, the end of this movie, it's heartbreaking, am I right?
Yes, I was a little concerned for your sanity after choosing the invitation and then following it up with the sacrament. I mean, these are very intense films. The first one is a much smaller film in a much smaller location, whereas this one is it's isolated, but in a much bigger way because it's out in the middle of nowhere, as I kind of mentioned before. Apparently, I have a fear of big open spaces, so let's not go to Montana.
Okay.
Anyway, this, in addition to that, has this communal aspect of people who are willing to do anything for this man named Father, and the eventual reality revealed to us that he does not care so much about them as they care about him, if that makes sense.
Right, so, you know, that's the other thing. You see somebody like this, any cult leader type person, and it's just, it's no good. I listened to, You Must Remember This, the podcast. I burned through the whole thing earlier this year, really, and I really, really enjoyed it. But there was a whole section on Charles Manson and just like the way he was able to get people to do things. I kept thinking about him when seeing Father on screen. And I would imagine, you know, that's kind of how all these other cult leaders are. I mean, Manson was a cult leader. He was a cult. He had people under his sway and they would do whatever he wanted them to do. And Father has that same thing about him that you can see. And it's scary. And then what he does to those people. And at first I was thinking like, oh, we're not going to see the real awful part of this. But,
oh, we do. Yes, I was a little surprised at, it's not gory necessarily.
Right.
But it's very disturbing. You see, let's just say you see people of all ages in their death throes at the end of this film.
Right. So if you're like a squeamish person or don't like seeing a lot of people die, you might want to steer away from this one. Yeah, it's just that whole last bit, it's so disturbing. And it really, but in even at the end of it, there's like, you know, a little kernel of hope, which I think is what makes the best scary movies work.
Yes, I do agree. It can be a tricky balance to play about that level of hope. I mean, even at the end of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you know, she escapes, but Leatherface is still out there. So exactly who the hope is for and where it is and how it's portrayed can be a very tricky thing.
Agreed. And I think that's kind of why I like this movie so much. And so, you know, we can talk a little bit about why I chose these two movies. The funny thing is I watched both of these once before and I love them. And I did not know if I would ever watch them again until we decided to do this double feature, because there, you know, there's just some movies that are so intense and you watch them and you kind of, you don't, like, I don't watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre all the time. I watched it, you know, in high school a few times. I own a copy of it. But it's probably been a couple of years since I've watched it because that movie's so visceral and intense. So I don't usually go back this soon because I watched both of these movies this year, I think. But I'm glad I did because there's so much there. There's whole parts that I had forgotten about. I'd forgotten about kind of the surprise that throws Will's whole theory off in Invitation. And I had forgotten about some of the camera stuff in The Sacrament. And so it was great to see them again.
And obviously the reason you chose these two films was because they share a certain tonal... they share certain tonal elements. This intensity, this fear, this human aggression against one another.
And of course, the cult aspect, which... The reason I actually originally thought to do Sacrament first and then Invitation... but I feel like if hopefully the way people listen to these episodes is they will watch the films that they see in the title or on the post on the website, unitedmonkey.com, which is MONKEE.com. I have been forgetting to tell everybody where to find the episodes. Yeah. I hope you just watch them. The reason I didn't do Sacrament first was because I thought that it might kind of ruin the cult side of Invitation in a weird way. So
I see. So you did Invitation first. It kind of hints at this cult element and the effects that it can have and potentially the wider effects on a much larger community than even the one it has in the foreign lands that they set up shop at some point. And then with The Sacrament, you dive right in. You actually see almost a kind of prequel almost to their experience in this film.
Right, exactly. So that's totally what I was going for. While these movies don't obviously refer to one another specifically, I think thematically they're so similar and tonally, like you mentioned, that it works. They work so well, and they work, I think, better in this order specifically. Like when we watch the Haunting films, you know, the order we watch them in, The Haunting and Legend of Hell House, I thought that was informative because the first came out first, and then the second one had obviously you know, the people had seen The Haunting, and then they made Legend of Hell House. So there was a... That was almost a narrative, a conversation with one another. With these, I just feel like they're similar without being about exactly the same thing, to the point where you can watch them, they inform each other in a way, and you can get a sense of what Eden went through in the first movie by watching the second, if that makes sense.
And you also get a sense of what might have happened if the end of the sacrament had not happened quite the way it did.
Right, exactly. So it's got this whole communication thing with each other, these films, and I really think that's great. And like I said, these films are amazing. I can't see them when I was 16 because that's not how timing works out. And I've noticed that my memory has kind of gone on the decline since then. So I don't have them memorized like I have, say, Dawn of the Dead or something like that, or some of the other movies that I watched when I was younger. But there's parts of them that definitely live inside me. Like, I feel like I get flashes of these things, especially if I hear something on the news, or even just, like, visually speaking, they kind of pop back up. And I'm curious to see if you have that, if they kind of stick with you after this.
Yes, I am too, although I hope you not have too many nightmares.
Nightmare? You have a lot of nightmares?
Well, yes and no sometimes.
Okay. All right, that's kind of unexpected. So, before we talk about the next episode, again, it's the holidays coming up, so maybe the schedule will be a little messed up. I know I've got to meet family. I'm sure you do too.
Yes, I'm spending Christmas with my loved one.
Oh, okay. Well, cool. That's great. So maybe like after that, maybe we can sneak one in before, probably after. We'll see. Everything's crazy.
Yes, and I do have a lot of New Year's Eve plans.
Well, cool. Yeah, of course you do. So, if you like the show,
well, I like it fine.
Not you. Listeners, if you like the show, head on over to iTunes and rate us, or go to United Monkey, the website I mentioned before, United, spelled normal, and then MONKEE.com, and you can leave comments there. I'm on Twitter at Papadietsch, which is PopPadietsch. We'd love to get some more feedback. If you have any suggestions for double features, let us know about them, or even topics. Like, that would be good, I think, if you give us a topic. And then Mr. Dastardly or myself can come up with a double feature based on that. Maybe we should do, like, a Christmas-themed one. What do you say?
Ooh, very good. Maybe we should team up on this one.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. We're going to work on that. You guys have a good week, and we'll see you when the next episode goes up.
Goodbye!